please remember that the Lucy Pod is not a replacement for professional medical advice. If you have questions or concerns about your own amazing brain, please speak to a medical professional. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I speak to you all today, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Hey guys, this is part two of my conversation with Kate. If you haven't already, go ahead and listen to part one, which is episode 61, and then come back to this one and enjoy.
He was like, he's like, is this why I like, you know?
And like, it was so, it's crazy because whenever I would like get into trouble at school or have issues at school and teachers would say, you know, Lucy, she does this thing. My dad's like, oh, I did that when I was young.
Yeah.
She'll grow out of it. And it's
but
like,
that's also
yeah.
the self-awareness of the parents. Like when they won't accept their kid's ADHD because they're not acknowledging the self-awareness. Exactly. So that's what I meant.
You know?
So self-awareness is the first one. And we think we're great because we've had to develop masking skills, which take hyper-awareness. But think of how many times you were told you're too loud, you're too wrong, you run into the wall. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, still lack that self-awareness.
So let's talk about your late diagnosis now that we've kind of going into, like, our dad's getting, acknowledging that they're ADHD late. So you were diagnosed at how old in your 30s, you 30, say?
34. Yes.
What was that like?
I didn't believe it. Like most ADHDers, I was
really?
Like,
oh. You didn't believe it. Oh, see, I was like, oh, finally, yes.
Oh, it didn't take me long to believe it. But when at first I was like, no.
I'm fine.
I think because my brother got diagnosed first. And okay.
It's a family affair.
Yeah, it's everybody. It's mom, dad, both brothers, my sons. And that's the other thing. People are like, when they say everybody's like that, my whole family's like that. I'm like, yeah, because your whole family's neurodivergent.
All
my friends are neurodivergent. Yeah, because we're attracted to people who think like it's just normal.
It's like, yeah, like my mom and dad, they're teachers and they'll have parents who will come and they'll say, our daughter was just diagnosed as autistic or ADHD and we just cannot believe it. We are so shocked. And then she'll like meet the parents and she's like.
Yeah. But it's like, that's the thing. If you are so used to growing up in a house where permission slips were lost or like safe place meant we will never see that thing ever again, right?
Homework being found at the bottom of the backpack, crumpled.
Oh! And the thing is, like, it's so, so my brother got diagnosed first.
Yes.
Then he's like, but it's so funny now in hindsight with him too, because he's like, he would do pull-ups in the doorway. He's like the most hyperactive, like white boy. So if he's like a smart white boy who is like really on the hyperactive side, like like he'll go to the beach and bring like 25 games with him. And I'll be like sitting there he'll be like, let's get up and play. And I'm like, I don't want to. No, stop.
Get away from me.
Leave me alone.
I don't want to do this activity. I don't want to do physical activity. Go away.
It's just like, he's like really into this, but he doesn't get for me. Like, that's too much work. That my executive function is like, oh, I just don't like, no.
He's like, no, I'm on. You're like,
I don't want to focus on what you want me to do. I want to just be able to do what I want to do.
And how old was he when he was diagnosed?
I think he was about the same as me because I got diagnosed a couple of years. He's 3 years older than me and I got diagnosed after him. So,
wow.
And he, like, for him, that's what he says. Because mostly, yeah, girls in the 90s fell through the cracks. But, like, even boys, hyperactive, smart boys, like my brother, who was, like, clearly, like, he always.
ADHD.
A lot of people fell through the cracks.
No, they do. It's true. Girls fall through the cracks because girls don't have ADHD. And boys fall through the cracks because being hyperactive and being boisterous is normal for little boys. Like, it's the stereotype,
and,
you know?
And the assignment of the birth or whatever, it's also the inattentive type ADHDers will fall through the cracks more because their hyperactivity is just internalized, which is, oh, a big thing. I'm going to use your podcast. This is my soapbox moment. ADD does not exist, people. It has not existed for 30 years. Please stop using the term. Please stop using it. And people get defensive. They get so mad. I have ADHD. I was like, you were, it is called ADHD.
ADHD.
Inattentive presentation. Yes.
And I have inattentive presentation. So God bless my mum, who, this isn't a slight on her. She's awesome. Love you, mum. She often, when she talks about it, she goes, you know, ADD. And I have to tell her, like, mum, that's not real. Just say I'm ADHD inattentive type. Inattentive presentation. And she's like, I know. But, you know, I just say ADD.
But no, and I'm like, okay, it's fine. And the reason is because people believe if you are ADHD inattentive
presentation, you're worse.
Well, no, that you don't have hyperactivity. And that is why they changed the name. That's because inattentive ADHDers have hyperactivity. It is just internalized.
It's internal.
In their mind.
It's like a million. So, like, for some people, it's like being loud, going on, da da da. And then for some, like me, it's a million tabs up here. And it's so noisy here. It's not noisy out here. It's noisy up here.
The daydreamer.
She's not a ditz. She's ADHD. Manic pixie dream girls are ADHD. I'm not explaining further.
Daydreamer, it's like, yes, your mind is going anywhere else but here. But it's like, and the way you could do this is also because people of inattentive ADHD, they still have impulsivity.
Yeah, totally.
Impulsivity is hyperactivity.
Yeah.
So if we stop refraining from ADHD as hyperactivity only being
the trait
external, like, yes, the talking a lot, this, like, because they'll, yeah, be like, I'm quiet, I'm introverted, I like this. I'm like, but what's going on up here? Do you stop thinking ever? And usually they'll be like, no, nobody does that. It's like, yes, other people actually, I still don't believe that nobody's like stops thinking. I can't imagine.
I can't, yeah.
But supposedly that happens.
So they say.
So like the impulsivity, the shopping, the switching, hyper-focus is like, that's hyperactivity. And the problem is, and that's why they changed the name, to get more inattentive ADD people, inattentive ADHDers, to get diagnosed. But they really want to deny that they have any hyperactivity, which I don't understand. Because even as you play with your skin or like twirl your hair or bite your nails, like, because my friend, the inattentive type, is always there twirling her hair, right?
And my inattentive friend who was as she calls herself, a ditz, always playing with her hair or her nails, always. Like,
yeah, that's so. But that's what I'm saying. Those are stim. Drinking water.
Oh, yeah, no, I stim.
Drinking water is a stim. That was the one that blew my mind. I was like, drinking water is a stim.
With your Stanley cup.
Yeah. I got, what's so funny, this is an ADHD story about my Stanley cup, because I'll say this.
I have a Stanley cup as well. Mine's a fake one.
I got the Stanley just for my house. And I want to be clear about this. It's because I used to drink water directly out of my faucet up here next to my bedroom. Because I have just drink it directly out of the faucet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like very. And then my husband got us like a filtered water cooler system.
Nice.
So I was like, oh, now that water tastes better. And I have to go get it. So I was like, I need the biggest cup.
They're so good.
So I don't have to run up and down the stairs. But my ADHD has, I'll be filling up the Stanley and then halfway through I'll be like, ugh, I'm so bored.
Because I have my Stanley at work, I will leave the water to run and fill my Stanley cup and I'll just walk away and then I'll run and be like, crap, it's overflowing. And then one of my lovely coworkers has turned it off for me. Overflow.
I do. It's like, I'm like, I love it, but like, and then if I don't fill it up all the way, I run out too soon. I'm like, Kate, you have to fill the Stanley.
You have to fill it up. You need to do
like,
the thing.
To me, it's just such an ADHD move where I'm like,
I'm really bored by this.
I'm so bored standing here filling up my water bottle that I will abandon.
I sometimes do it half full because I'm like, I can't be bothered waiting.
But that is not normal. That's not neurotypical. People are not going to be like, they can't stand for a minute to fill. It doesn't take that long.
And when you try to explain it to a neurotypical, they look at you and they go, yeah, can't say I've ever felt that way. Like, yeah.
No, because it doesn't take long. But I just meant so.
Yeah.
That's my ADD exists. Yeah. But yes, getting diagnosed, I think it was, like I said, it wasn't until I really acknowledged that feeling of hyperactivity and then I actually had felt it and I couldn't have the alcohol to dumb it down, to numb it. Alcohol was my mask, because if you're drunk and loud and weird, that's just like, oh, she's drunk.
She's drunk. But she's fun. She's a fun drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, no, you know, like. I'm always loud. I'm sensitive, so sensitive. Like I am. I'm super Same. Sensitive.
Same.
And I think it just took a while to really see. And I think it's also because I didn't understand, like, the same why I became an educator, because I don't I didn't know what ADHD actually was. Right. And as soon as I took the meds, and like a lot of people who say the first time they took ADHD meds, they're like, oh my God, my brain got quieter for like the first time ever.
It's a magical experience.
It was just like, it was easier to just do the thing. Like it made it easier to do. And I was like, oh.
That's true. What was it like going on medication? Was that something you were told you should go on when you were diagnosed? Or you like, now that I'm diagnosed, I want to be medicated?
I think for me, I wanted meds.
Great.
Mm-hmm. I don't like psychiatrists who deny stimulant medication to patients, because if you read all the research,
they work.
It's the number one line of, it's the number one thing you're supposed to give. And I get that. And for me, I was glad my psychiatrist, like, because he knew I was an alcoholic. I knew him before I stopped drinking. Mm. And so for people like me with passive addiction, they'll be like, we're not going to give you these meds. But that's stupid. And like, that was like a conflict for me in that sense. But I'm good because I'm not scared of pharmaceuticals. Like, I don't understand the idea of not taking meds.
Neither.
If there's something wrong, because if you had asthma, you would use your inhaler.
You would take your inhaler. You know, are a diabetic. I even people who shame parents for medicating their children, you would not shame a parent if their child had cancer and that parent was getting them to do chemo. You wouldn't shame them. Because it's to help
like
them.
I'm just going to go the natural route. And then you take like unregulated supplements or something. It's like,
it's crazy. It's like, so you're fearful of stimulants, which are regulated and safe, but you will take all these other things.
Studies that show stimulants work.
And we're not, and obviously people do what they want. Like some people are like, I don't want to take medication, but I think it's great. And we're not shunning those people. You do what you want.
People who refuse to fear. Try it. Who refuse to try it out of fear. That's what I don't like.
Or out of shame or judgment, and you just shouldn't.
It's also classist, because if you're not going to treat, because I'll be like this, pills don't teach skills, right? That's what I always say, right? Your medication's not going to solve the problem. It's not, but it's going to make it easier.
Manages it. It's not a cure-all. This isn't a cure-all.
Like we talked about coaches or people like me or education, that's money. And maybe you don't have the money to take my class, to get an ADHD coach, to see a therapist regularly if it's not covered.
Of right? course.
Medication is cheap. It's affordable. It's accessible. That's the problem. And when we shame medication or we say it's the easy way out, it's That's like, bull. No.
But also, even if it was the easier way out, so what? I want my life to be easier. I do. I want my life to be easier. So if it's the easy way out, so be it. It's not. But so be it.
We don't need to struggle. It's the same with depression. People think, well, if you take antidepressants, you're just magically going to be happy. No, you're still depressed. You're just like at the baseline.
It's a treatment. It's not a cure. It's a treatment. It's like, you wouldn't say to some, I agree with you.
Any doctor is also going to say, you can't just take meds. You have to do the other things. Of course.
You have to do the other things. Like you would never, it's like you would never say to someone who uses a wheelchair, well, you're just taking the easy way out. Like, that's crazy. That's absolutely ridiculous. That's
they do though. That's what I'm saying. It's always this idea.
Yeah, they do. You wouldn't say it, but people do.
It doesn't matter. But my point is, for me, I don't have a problem with taking meds because I know they help.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of taking meds. I don't particularly love having to take so many meds. It's not my favorite thing.
Mm.
Especially because I also have PMDD, which you said your period makes you crazy. It took me even longer to figure out the PMDD. And that's also comes down to women just being just the patriarch in general. Patriarchy, boo, two thumbs down.
Sucks.
Because I would be like, it's normal to want to die 2 weeks out of every month because of mice. No, it's not. Okay. No, that's not normal. And that's because.
But so many things women are told, like, that's just going to hurt. Like, that's just going to be really bad.
You're
like,
just going to be a pain. You're just going to be a pain.
Like, you know, the first time you have sex, it will hurt. You will bleed. You will be very upset. When you have your period, it is normal to vomit. Just take an aprogesic. When you give birth, it is normal to be in excruciating pain and to hemorrhage. It's like, yeah, it's just actually not. It's actually not normal.
PMDD, for your listeners, I don't know, it's premenstrual dysphoric disorder.
It
is so much worse than PMS. It was literally my period trying to kill me. That's what it's saying. It is.
It's horrible.
It's horrible.
I'm pretty sure I have it.
I mean, 50% of people with ADHD were 50% more likely to have it. Mm. I got it after the birth of my second child, so I did not have it my whole life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one was a big deal because when I was younger, hormonal birth control did make me kind of crazy. So I was really scared to go on hormonal birth control. That was the only time I've been scared to take a medicine, but I did it. But I know, but the thing is, a lot of people don't understand that when you take meds, when you're doing a treatment plan, it's trial and error. There's a lot of time you have to do. You have to adjust. There's going to be side effects. People don't take into account the cost, the risk benefit analysis that doctors do. Because birth control is so bad for you. It's like, not bad for me. Yes, it will increase my risk of a blood clot. But
like a lot of other things.
They told me that and they're like, well, is a blood clot going to kill her or is she going to kill herself because she's so fucking depressed? Sorry, I swore on your podcast.
No, it's fine. You're allowed to swear. No, but I, and also a lot of people, specifically with ADHD meds, they think that it's irreversible. Like when I tell people I once was on a really high dose of Concerta and it made me lose a lot of weight and it was really, really bad. And they were like, see, this is why. And I'm like, no, but wait, I changed the dosage and it went away. It's all about trial and error. The effects are not permanent. Once you stop taking it and you go on a different one, you just have to play around a bit. It's not permanent.
You don't have to take meds forever.
You don't have to. Yeah. If you don't want to,
I feel that it's so weird how much everybody feels that. So for me, I took the meds.
Yeah.
And I believe I used to, get meds in college from other people. And I was like a kid that was like, I get them. And it helped me do my work. At first I thought I was just really good at I got the diagnosis I wanted. Mm. But a lot of ADHDers feel that way. They're like, maybe I'm just really good at acting, or maybe I just convinced myself.
Were you frustrated? Because I hear a lot of late diagnosis people, their first feeling is anger and then grief of what could have been for them. They're like, if I had just been diagnosed earlier, I would have been able to do this and this and this, and I wouldn't have had to go through this. Or were you?
No,
you were different.
Because yes, grief is valid and you can have it.
Yeah, of course. Everyone's different.
I think it's just more. In the 90s, especially, it wouldn't have made a difference. I might have gotten some meds, but there was nothing more they would have done for me. There was no ADHD educators. There weren't all these podcasts. There wasn't all this information. There weren't people there wasn't as much understanding. I would maybe had a note taker. I don't think it would have really changed so much.
Culturally, it just wasn't.
Culturally, it wasn't. So I feel like, it's like our grass is always greener. Like you think it might, but I have a lot of students who came who were diagnosed as children and it didn't really make a difference because of the time. Or it just like, it's just a different struggle, but it's still a struggle.
It's still a struggle.
I think there can be anger. Like I said, there's the anger of how many women were just completely ignored.
And left behind.
And I feel like, I always say, like I told you, the perfectionism and the anxiety are things that I've been trying the most to undo because perfectionism's not good.
No.
Not a good thing.
No, it's not healthy.
It's not healthy, but it got me to finish things, right? So it's like a double-edged sword because there's so many ADHDers who can't finish anything, but the reason I finished is because of my fear of perfection. I couldn't fail.
Yeah.
I'm like the overachiever. I was smart. I had to prove I was smart too. Mm. But it doesn't, it like that constant fear doesn't help.
No.
I feel all the friendships I lost. That is something that was hard.
Did you? So you know. Really? After
I
being
lost a lot of friends. No. Like,
oh,
before I was diagnosed.
Okay, I was going to say.
Because, you know, people think we're selfish or we're self-centered or we don't care. And to me, that was always so confusing, being told I was selfish when I was like, I don't think I'm selfish.
No. And also, we're all...
Because it would be the joke when I was a kid was, anyways, back to me. Like, I talk about myself a lot. But that's how neurodivergents communicate. You tell me a story about you, I tell you a story about me. I'm trying to show you I understand.
Yeah.
But that creates this giant misunderstanding, or things like active listening, or you don't listen, or you don't ask enough questions. So I lost friends because people didn't. That part hurts.
Of course it, yeah. Oh, I remember in primary school, I had no friends. I had zero friends. And at the time, I didn't really care, because I was like, I'm very happy being on my own. But I know how sad it was for my parents when they would just like see that I was very alone, and people just found me very annoying, in your face, selfish, not a good listener. And it's sad. And I wasn't sad at the time, but I feel sad for little me. I'm like, that was sad for her. It's sad. Yeah.
It's too much. I'm too much, girl. You're intense.
You're too much. And it's never in a good way. It's never like, oh my God, you're so much and I love it. It's always like, you're too much. It's like, well, maybe you're not enough. Like, I don't know.
The amount of times I was called too much or a lot. And like, one, I think we need to stop telling anybody that. I don't know why it was so okay to throw that around. Like, she's so much or a lot.
Yeah.
Like, why was I called that so many times in so many situations and have it been appropriate? It's not a nice thing to say to someone.
I think it's because very
what happens
nice.
If you tell an ADHDer they're being too much? What's the automatic response?
Anger.
To shrink and hide themselves and not be anything. Yeah. We told you there's only two modes. Okay, I'm too much and I'm just going to not say anything. Yeah. Then you don't say anything and people are going to go, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You're not talking. What's the matter? You just
told me to stop. Yes. I think it's a very unkind thing to say to someone, and it very much upsets me, and I really cannot bear it when people tell me I'm being too loud or too much. So now I say, and maybe it's not nice to say it back, I'm like, maybe I'm just making up for your lack of personality.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to shrink myself for you. If I'm too much, get out of the kitchen.
A thing about this is, we know about rejection sensitivity. I'm not going to say dysphoria, because rejection sensitivity to dysphoria is a made-up thing.
I talked about it with Jessica McCabe, the How To ADHD, and we talked about this, and I was using it incorrectly.
Rejection sensitivity is a trauma response. That is what we have, okay? Mm. We do have rejection sensitivity. RSD, it's fine. We can claim the thing.
My point is,
it doesn't matter, but the actual term is rejection sensitivity. It's a trauma response. And we are extra sensitive to critique or this, we take this. But on the flip side of this, I forget what it's called, but we also experience joy more than other people experience joy.
Yes,
you are too sensitive. This is a fact. People with ADHD are too sensitive. People with autism are too sensitive. It is. We are sensitive.
Yeah.
We are sensitive because we're experienced this like extreme.
But I also resent being called too sensitive, not as in resent it from you, from other people when they say it to be mean. It's like, aren't we all sensitive?
That's a different. The point is, we are too sensitive. We react differently. We struggle with emotion regulation. So we're sensitive to our environment. Like I said, we cannot rule out the things around us. We are sensitive to time. Like, there's a lot of things going on to us that like it, the moment matters so much.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, that's just part of who we are. So it's not anything wrong with you being too sensitive, but you should acknowledge that you are more sensitive than the average.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
But the thing is, when you get called too much, that's usually because we're really excited. And so the flip side of when you're really sad about something or hurt by something, it's because we're mostly just excited.
It actually upsets me more when I'm happy about something and I get told I'm too much, rather than if I'm upset and I'm told I'm too much. It's actually, I find it more hurtful when I'm like trying to share something exciting with you and you've shut me down.
And a lot of people do that. And I realized it's because neurotypicals, just as much as they're not used to being so sensitive, they don't get that excited. They don't have that extreme level of excitement, of joy.
Elation, yeah.
And it's like, they will not experience like when the sun is shining perfectly and it's the right temperature and you're listening to the right song and you're in the park and you're like, oh my God, it's so like, cause
it's hitting different. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just those small joys. So I feel that with ADHDers, we need to acknowledge that. Yeah. You are too sensitive, but you also experience things just more intensely.
That's not a bad thing.
It's not a bad thing, but it's also, we do need to understand that a lot of the population doesn't experience the world that way. And that's why with me it's more about that, explaining this. Because the more you understand the why and the how, and the more you can communicate to people around you that, yeah, I'm really excited when I see a cool bird. And I know you don't think that's cool, but like, I'm not hurting you. I'm not harming you. And when you shut me down, like, that's mean. And I think you can be more assertive and communicate and like just state your piece. But it's also about asking consent, I say. So like the info dumping. Because when we're excited, we tend to info dump. But it's like, can I talk about consent and this? You do need to be like, are you in a place where I can info dump on you?
And can I do your head in? I always say, can I do your head in?
Yeah. So I think that's all it takes. So the more the communication comes in, the more you can understand what you're going to do.
And that it's not malicious what I am trying to do. It's not malicious.
It's not malicious if your friend can't listen to
Right? That's true. No, it's true. I think it goes, and I think there's a big difference between saying to someone, you're too much, and then being like, you're info dumping right now. I'm just really not in a place to hear that. That's valid. Yeah, like, you don't have to.
I think I agree with you. All parties need to understand what is happening.
Of course.
And that's what I do. I explain what's happening.
Now, I have a question.
Like more neurotypicals to come to my class because I feel they think it doesn't apply to them. But I'm like, it does, because you are dealing with us. So more ADHDers come, because then they can explain
to their
neurotypical counterparts in their lives, so they get to talk to.
Yes.
But I would rather have the neurotypicals themselves come to my class.
Yes.
Because I can make it make sense for them too. That's what teachers do. They make complicated topics make sense.
Makes sense. Because I was going to ask you, I was going to say, do you, like, can anyone come and learn from you? Or is it like, it makes sense for an ADHD to go, like, why would a neurotypical go? But
ADHDers do come more than neurotypicals.
Of course.
Because I think neurotypicals feel that it doesn't apply to them.
Yeah.
And that's part of any disabled group, that it doesn't apply to them. Why do I need to learn about the struggles of selective mute? Like, you know, it's like, but if you, but the problem is with neurodiversity, everybody should learn this because there's so many of us. There's so many of us.
And you will have children with them. You will marry them. You will befriend them. You will work for them. You will, you know, be their boss and so on.
And even in like work or like corporate or capitalism, right? ADHDers do have skill sets that are valuable.
Oh, hell yeah.
So I don't like that that's what I tell the ADHD people, is that you need to repackage it, reframe it. Which is annoying, but it's like the same for neurotypicals. They need to understand, how does this benefit them? And that's not a bad thing. Everybody cares about themselves at the end of the day. And so like for workers or something, or whenever it comes down to accommodations at school, people always feel this is a bad thing. It's like, but this helps you. This helps everybody. Isn't the idea to produce the thing?
They're there to help. If something is there and it's designed to assist you, and you are eligible for that assistance.
Well, right? it never makes sense but they always feel it's going to be hard. Right?
Yeah.
People that making accommodations is hard, when really it's like, can I have a desk by the window? Can I wear headphones at work?
Yeah.
Can I record this meeting?
Yeah. Yeah. Can I film what you're doing on the screen so I just remember how to do it?
Yeah. It's really, and especially now with AI and technology, there's no reason that there shouldn't be transcripts of important meetings at every office.
Of course. I think now that's being integrated more and more, like platforms automatically have transcripts, which a lot of people don't like see the point. Like, why do they have a transcript? I'm like, very useful accommodation and ADHD tool. Very important.
Yeah. Yes.
So, you know.
But I hope my goal was always eventually to get into more training. Teachers or corporations or offices, just because the more they just know, it's easier. And then everyone's like, do I believe a lot is going to change? No. If I get into a big corporation, especially in Japan, right? If I get into a big corporation where I can teach about this, do I think Japan's magically going to cater to? No.
Yeah.
I don't. But do I think there's going to be enough people in that audience that are like, oh.
Well, what's it like in Japan? What's being ADHD like in Japan? Is it like...
In some ways, it's good and bad. There's a lot of rules in Japan, so it's easy to just follow the rules. There's far more rules in Japan than anywhere else. So we can follow rules. The problem is when the rules don't make sense, and then I get annoyed. I do get angry at a rule that makes no sense. But there's a lot of rules that make no sense here. But it's, if you're a child growing up in the system, it's so easy to just go, because everybody does the same things. Also, like, if you can see my background here and all my like shiny, sparkly,
yes,
oh kitty, like cute, like
I love it.
Well, but I mean, like, that's normal too. Me being a 40-year-old woman with my Hello Kitty obsession is not weird in Japan, right? So the trains run on time. Like, there's just like, and there's a lot of convenience in Japan, especially because they work a lot.
Yes.
So like, you can get like. There's, and a lot of people are single people, so there's also a lot of food designed only to feed one person. So for ADHDers, I feel this is really easy for me. Like, those things make it really easily. So you can get like a one chicken breast pre-cooked in a thing at the convenience store, which is perfect, because if you can't eat, you're like, okay, I'll just eat this protein.
You're just making me want to go to Japan more. My parents have been twice. They go on about it. I'm going at the end of the year. You're just convincing me. It sounds great.
The being different. The problem is that when you go against this, and it's very hard. But I would say you'd have to ask Japanese people about that, because I'm a foreign person living in Japan, so I'm never going to be considered normal.
Yes.
Or expected to follow these rules. I'm expected to not understand, like, it is xenophobic, not really racism. It's xenophobic.
Oh, it's xenophobic. Yeah.
Well, especially as not a woman of color, for me, it's not racism. It's xenophobia. Like, it doesn't matter.
Women
of color, people of color in Japan do deal with more racism and other stuff. To me, so we have to be clear about this. Japan's xenophobic and racist.
Yes.
But the xenophobia is what it is. So
yes.
It doesn't matter if I follow the rules or not, because they don't believe I'm capable of following the rules.
They're like, silly white woman, it's fine.
Silly, dumb, foreign woman, right?
But that gives
me a lot more freedom to do what I want.
That's good.
But if you are actually within the system, it's hard. And it's very hard for you to go against the grain. So it's, again, it's all or nothing. So it's either you can fake it and you can go in it. But there's also, like I said, there's so many things that you like, that you can find a group, sort of, you know. And like I said, that a lot of adults liking Pokemon or this or that, there's just like, I feel they really care about their hobbies a lot, their interests, because they don't get a lot of time to do it.
And niches, there's a lot of niches, observed, which is great. Whereas here, like, well, here in, you know, in Australia, like, it's odd. Like, if you were to tell people, like, you collect Hello Kitty, people would be like, that's weird.
Yeah, but
they think there's something wrong with you. They're like, are you autistic? Or there's something, like, wrong. Whereas there, it's like, no one cares. It's fine.
I mean, but that's also why they don't get diagnosed.
Right? It's like, do I just like Hello Kitty and I'm Japanese? Or is it also because I'm neurodivergent?
Well, it's that, and it's it's also because if you can follow the rules, masking is easy. It's boring.
Yeah.
I'm a public school teacher here for a reason, because I'm there to help the kids that can't flow with this system.
Yeah.
But it's easy to follow the rules because the rules are very clear. Right?
Mm.
You just have to go through the actions and follow the people. So think, it takes away that guessing of masking, right? It's just everybody's doing the same thing.
The same
so
thing. It's uniform.
Don't know what's going. Yeah, it's very uniform. So for the most part, if you can do that, and the only reason you can't do that is usually because you're too bored out of your mind. Like, I would be like so bored. But like, you can't, like in Japan, everybody's supposed to be the same. That's the problem. So
yes.
You can't be good at something. You can't be bad at something. You're just supposed to all be the same, which is also stupid because even Japanese people know that that's not real. Nobody's exactly, no. We're not all the same. It's not, no. But no. The idea of equality versus equity is much more of a thing here.
Like very homogenous. Yeah.
Well, it is not homogenous. That's
but
my
they,
biggest.
But they
that
always.
That's
but
a, they insist. That is a lie. That is
they
a
insist.
Lie.
It's like, it's not.
It's a myth. It's a myth of homogeneity. It drives me crazy because they're very good at these myths of things being fine, of things being perfect, of things working well.
Mm.
And I do think it's catching up. I also believe that you know, sustainable development goals, do you know, SDGs? SDGs are like, they're the thing that the UNESCO, like basically decided these goals for like the future and like the UN and all these people talk about, right?
Yes.
So Japan, SDGs became very trendy. Like they'll be like, SDGs, we care about the SDGs. They have like 22 goals. Like you can look them up, right? And in my head, I want to make neurodiversity like the next STG.
Yeah, I like it.
Package it and sell it enough that they'll be like, oh, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah,
it's
trendy.
Cool. It's trendy because it's like the STG. I don't know what. They'd have like a Hello Kitty SDG bus and they'd be like, Kitty Chan would be like, let me explain sustainable development goals.
That's funny. That's funny.
So I think my idea is that in a few years, they're slow, but in a few years, neurodiversity will become more of a trend. Like, not in the way that people are like, oh, it's trending now. Like,
no.
It's become a literal trend in Japan. And once it gets here, it will be everywhere.
It'll be everywhere. It's like t-shirts with it. I'm kidding.
But I mean, many more adult women in Japan are getting diagnosed as well.
That's good.
That
makes me
autism,
happy.
Apparently, autism is highly diagnosed here, which I didn't know. The guy who made Pokemon, the inventor of Pokemon, is autistic.
That checks out.
Yeah.
And I mean that in a good way. That checks out.
And no, and it was because his special interest was bugs. He was a bug collector. And then he created Pokemon.
You heard it here, folks.
And so it's like for a lot of people like Pokemon are nerd. Yeah, he that was his thing. He turned his special interest into, you know.
And got speed and it's fun. It works.
I mean, it's one of the most profitable businesses in I mean, and that's why, like, Japan is really paradoxical in the sense that they can be super creative and cute,
yeah.
But it's also, like, forced conformity. So I like that as a foreigner, I'm not forced into any of these roles. As
that's
a woman,
cool.
Like, misogyny is really bad in the country, I would say that, but
yeah.
I'm also not a Japanese woman, so again.
It's different.
It's annoying because I've been here for 18 years. I'm a permanent resident of this country. I know a lot about Japan and they'll be like, oh, stupid white girl doesn't know what she's talking about. Or like when they tell me to my face that my half Japanese children are not Japanese, but they would never once in their minds tell my Japanese husband that his children are not Japanese. And I'm just, because Yutaka is like, my husband's like, what do you mean they tell you that our kids aren't Japanese? I'm like, they'll tell me that the kids aren't Japanese, like that they don't count, that they're not really Japanese. And this is like a lot of half Japanese people get this, right? Right? Because, but I'm like, they have Japanese passports.
We don't have to justify it. They're Japanese. They're half Japanese.
Well, I mean, they're half Japanese. They're Japanese. But they're Japanese citizens. That makes them Japanese.
They're Japanese. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
But people feel it's okay to tell me they are not Japanese, but they would never, ever, ever say that to my Japanese, male Japanese husband. And I feel the same that for Japanese women, people might tell them that, but a Japanese male's not going to.
They wouldn't dare. Yeah. I wonder what that's called.
Patriarch.
I wonder what that's called. There's a word for it, and I think it's that. Now, before we started recording, you announced something very, very exciting that I would like you to announce here, and also talk.
It's gonna be full circle. Because I told you that photography was first, but that's actually not true. Words were first, writing. You said you like words and language. I really like lyrics, and songs, like lyrics. Like there's some people who like music and don't care about lyrics. And I'm just like, I do not care about the lyrics.
Unless you're listening to classical music.
No, music, I get it. But lyrics are like good lyrics are life changing.
Yeah.
Like I'm not clear. And so.
No, it's true. It's true.
And so actually what was first for me was writing. I was a poet. I would write poems when I was like 8. I wrote a poem.
Nice.
I started songwriting last year in like end of 2022. I started songwriting. Mm-hmm. And the name of my album that's never going to come. Well, it will come out eventually.
It will.
It's based off a poem I wrote when I was 8, which is like a core memory. And it's like a mole sat down and said, why me? And it's all about this like sad mole who's like blind and like can't see. Oh. Like I remembered this poem my whole life. And in hindsight, because I brought back all my poems from America, the poems came first, not the photography. The words came first. The language came first. And so I would write a bunch of poems, and we read you this one. So the announcement is I'm going to take all my poems that are already written. Because like I said, I started writing poems when I was 8.
You got a lot of material.
Yes. And basically I'm going to create a book of all my art, all my lyrics drawn in notebooks.
It'll be like an anthology.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a poetry book, but I'm going to mix it with all my other art. Mm. It's called Signed Every Millennial. I'm self-publishing. I'm writing it already.
Woo!
And I'm going to combine all my old poems and my new poems mixed with growing up in Oakland, California in the 90s, which has like, if you think about also the 90s music scene in Oakland and the hip hop and Alanis Morissette and like these like really strong lyrical based like huge movements that were there, like you can see this in all of my and
your
my
book. Rich
one
yes
and my book will be called Signed Every Millennial, which is about a poem too, and that poem is long, but at the end it says unprecedented times are truly exceptional. Thanks for the memories, signed Every Millennial. Because they're like, this is unprecedented. This is a way, like, that's not, the millennials have lived that their whole life. This, like, I'm older than you, so you don't know how many times, like, it's unprecedented. And I'm it's like, they're truly exceptional how many unprecedented things I've had to experience in my short life already. So for you are all Gen Z, but it's fine. But
I'm millennials who listen.
Unprecedented times are truly exceptional. Thanks for the memories, signed Every Millennial. That's the poem's much longer than that, but that's the title.
I like that.
But this is a poem I told you I would read it for you guys. We'll
yes.
end with this. This poem I wrote in, I think, like I said, these are true notebooks. So I have to have people believe this. So I'm going to provide images of the proof. Of me like writing poems at like 6.
Just
because
working.
These are all in my notebooks. Like
I believe you. I believe you. And the listeners believe you. I approve this message.
Yes. So this is called The Unknown Third Party.
It's a good one.
I probably was about 13. And it says, The Unknown Third Party, staring as the walls collide, streaming thoughts going 1 million miles per hour as she run desperately trying to catch up. Running till she hits her brick wall of reality and the ticking time bomb goes off in her mind when she was counting the seconds all along. Smiles from the other two, compassion from her friends as she picks up the pieces and pretends that nothing happened. Okay, did I just diagnose my, like...
Guys, before you go on, option A, who is the third party? A third party. B, ADHD. Who is the third party? Answer in the comments below. Now, reveal the answer.
The unknown
third party is...
Yeah, I mean, so it's going to be me collecting these old clear signs of ADHD. That's what I'm saying.
Yes,
like,
yes.
And like, I have the notebooks because all of these poems are written, like I was telling you, they were written in class. They were written when I was daydreaming. They were written when I was there.
Or when you were doing the ADHD.
Or it's like I said, or it was like emotional regulation to get these words out into this poetry form. Like, because some of them are so dramatic, you know, like, oh. Because I was a teenage girl. Yeah, I'm a teenage girl. I'm like, oh, my God.
And poetry's healing. And even you read poets, you know, from back in the day who were adults, and it's dramatic as hell. It's moody. It's, you know, poetry is a journal. It's your feelings.
And so I had sort of stopped writing poems when I came. But like I said, other art just took over. It doesn't mean it went away. And there was always lyrics. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. But... when I went to songwriting, it's like after my mom died and I had some falling out with some friends and I went back to, and I guess like poetry wasn't enough then. I needed the music then, but like I needed that. And then I found out I was really good at it. I'm like, oh, I'm so like you said, like, and songwriting, of course I was good at songwriting. I could always write poems. Like, it's not, like, I don't know why. And to me...
But lyricism is a form of poetry. A lot of songwriting is poetry.
It is. No,
it is poetry. Even bad songs, even crappy ones, they are poetry. Rap is poetry.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So growing up with these, it makes sense that poems were always there, that the lyrics hit me. But the reason I thought I couldn't be a songwriter... It's very ADHD too, because I would listen to people like Fiona Apple, who you probably don't know.
No, I know Fiona Apple.
You know Fiona? Okay. And she's like a prodigy genius pianist, right?
She is. She's phenomenal.
So I was like, you write music, I need to be a pianist prodigy.
Yes.
Right? Like there was like there was no in between, right?
She's amazing, Fiona Apple. She's like the female Tom Waits.
But she is a product, like she could play the piano since she was a young child. And like the thing is,
she's like Regina Spektor. She's like Regina Spektor. She's phenomenal. Yeah.
I couldn't play an instrument.
Same. I can't play an instrument.
I can't
only my
play
voice.
An instrument, right?
Yeah, neither.
So to me, I was like, I can't write songs because clearly you have to be a prodigy at the piano to be a songwriter.
Not true.
And so I discovered that it's not true. And everyone else is like, Kate, it's like the number thing. They're like, you know that. Millions of songwriters like don't sing or don't even like do it, like they just
I'm pretty sure Sia, who's like one of the most popular like songwriters, I don't think she was a child prodigy with the piano.
Robbie Williams never played in like so many people don't play it. Like you might learn a few chords on the guitar
and they can maybe riff and you know I like this melody you don't need that. Does it make it easier? I don't think so, but you don't need an instrument.
It's more about listening. You just need to be able to hear and you need to be able to tell stories. So, yes, I could write. I never tried to write a song. But the thing is with the songwriting and this book, because I do mention that in the book, I already wrote this part because I'm like, the album's going to come out eventually. Well, only ADHD knows which will be first.
We don't know which.
Because I do include some of my lyrics in there to show. And it's going to be just this, basically it's a memoir, but using my own words.
Your work. Yeah, your own words.
My own artwork throughout the years of unknown third parties, which are clearly ADHD. There's a lot of poems, because that's just one example.
There's more.
That one to me is like, I'm describing ADHD to the T.
I said right? it's like an allegory, like personifying it or something. It's very
especially
clear.
The ticking time bomb goes off.
The racing thoughts.
For me, the ticking time bomb is because, like, that's what I'm saying. We're watching that clock. We're watching that deadline approach. And then we act like, what happened? Right? It's like you hit your brick wall. You're like, but you were counting. Like, that to me was even more than the racing thoughts. Because I was like, oh, my God. Like, you were describing ADHD. And, like, so to me, it's like, that's known. That's a known party now.
So, it's a non-party now, yes.
So, yes, signed every millennial. I'm self-publishing. I've already started writing, which is the big, I did start it.
Started it.
Yeah, and I have to go to the Genius Bar today to fix my AirPods. So,
Apple. Wait, Genius.
The Apple.
It's that. Yeah,
You have to go to the Apple Store, which is. You can hate Apple. I don't care.
I'm an Apple girly.
I mean, it's just like I just feel it's too hard to like anything. I have Apple products. Don't come for me.
Yeah.
It's okay. I have to go to the Apple Store. Which means I'm going to go write today, too, because it's going to take so much time. Watch it be really fast. Watch me be in and out.
Yeah, you'll be in. You're going to do this. And you've inspired me because the last few people I've spoken to, interviewed, they're all writing books who have written a book. And I don't know how many drafts I've started of my ADHD book, and I keep deleting it, and I just need to continue. I just need to
follow. Well, and like I said, my story of being a smart perfectionist alcoholic who's too much, who like needs to apply, like it's my story is not special. It's my story.
Yeah, and it's special, and it, yeah, no,
but it's like people will relate to it because growing up in the 90s undiagnosed was just the norm. that's just what it was. And so when you talk about the grief, I think that when we went back to that, like that's the thing, is that it was normal to be undiagnosed in the 90s. In hindsight, yes, it's annoying that it took so long for women to get diagnosed.
Yes, that's frustrating. Yeah. I guess the other people I've had on who express the grief, it's because they're like Gen Zers or whatever, and like there's more awareness, so they're almost like aggravated by the fact. Like the person I interviewed the other day, she's awesome. Her parents were both doctors. They did an ADHD diagnosis when she was little and they found she wasn't ADHD. And then years later, she then finally got diagnosed. So she was really angry and like, how did you miss it? But that's because now it's so much more like this normal and stuff.
Even my eldest brother, he's ADHD too. And he was like, I got diagnosed in the 90s, but they said I was too smart. And I'm like, that's not a thing anymore, Jess. Like you can go.
Yeah, but that's not like, a thing.
That was a thing.
Yeah, it was.
It was a thing. And the only girls, especially that I know got diagnosed who were good at school, it's because they had a parent who was like, no, something's up.
And onto it. Yeah.
And they pushed it.
Yeah. But if you don't have the awareness, how are you going to know?
School tried with that whole, she's getting B's. That was, in hindsight, that was the attempt. They were like, something's up.
Yes.
Why is she? But it was, I feel the approach did not work, especially for my ADHD father, who was like, why are you bringing me down to school to tell me my daughter's getting like, it was
no, but I'm with him. I'm with him. I'd be like,
they called him out of work to come to school to talk. And they were like, and he was just like, I'm a contractor. He was a carpenter. He's a contractor. He's like, I am losing money.
I'm working. I'm busy. And you're telling me here that my daughter is doing well.
Yeah, that's so, but like I said, hindsight, that was the closest they got to actually, that was the like, hey, why
is
she not performing better? And I get it, but it's like, so if it's like, if I didn't have the smarts, the giftedness, which I want to say this too before I go, my last thing is I pick words of the year.
And what's your word of the year?
My word of the year this year is smart artist because it took me 41 years for me to be like, hey, I am smart and I am an artist. And it shouldn't take people 41 years to acknowledge this. And like, I don't like the giftedness thing.
Yeah, it's a bit...
Because especially as an educator, it's just like, I believe there's so many forms of intelligence. And it's not,
but
it's
also, it can be dangerous.
But I feel like I am really smart. That's okay. I can say that. It's not, I'm not disclaiming anybody else. But
you're just saying you making a comment about yourself hasn't got anything to do with anybody else.
But I just meant as an educator, I understand that there's plenty of ways to be smart.
Yeah, but you're smart. That's fine.
It's like it took me 40 years to be able to say I'm smart. And like, it's still hard for me because you've still heard disclaimers coming out of my mouth here.
Oh, we always do. Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's like, but if I didn't have that aspect, and a lot of the girls who were misdiagnosed were smart.
Yeah.
Smart girls.
Yeah.
But it becomes overachieving, perfectionist, anxiety written, shame of your whole worth being based on your productivity and your smartness. And then artists, and then being the artist, like I've been an artist my whole life. Like you saw these poems, I'm writing these poems when I'm eight, right? 8 years old, I'm writing a poem about a mole, right?
A blind, sad mole. I hope he's okay. Yeah, I hope he's okay now.
He was really sad. He didn't mind. He's like, oh, why can't I see the sunlight or stars?
We've had such emotional conversations, and that's the one that's going to make me cry thinking about this mole.
My mole poem. But that's what the name of my album is, because the album, the songwriting got me back to writing poems. And the name of my album will be A Mole Sat Down and Said by Me. And all my friends were like, that's such a great name. But it was like... It's the connection of back to poetry, back to writing.
And I have to say, when I'm thinking of the mole right now, and I'm thinking of, I don't know if you ever played Animal Crossing, I'm thinking of Rossetti, the mole that comes out when you haven't saved your game. So you're saying something really profound, and I'm like, Animal Crossing,
I love Animal Crossing.
It's making me think of Rossetti, that mole, because he is sad as well, so it's making me think of that.
I do, but I'm going to write it. It's going to come out. Not that my at Learning Compass.
Oh, yes. Plug your stuff before we
leave. At Learning Compass on Instagram.
Yes.
KateKamoshita.com. You can spell that out for them. We also, we have the masterclass that me and the ADHD nutritionist did that you can watch the recording of. So if you couldn't come live, you can still do that.
Awesome.
That's up for sale now still. And my next course, which I have to talk to my assistants, hopefully it's going to probably start next month. I just have to figure it out because I got a new high school job. But
awesome.
I will be teaching the executive function course again. And everybody should take this because I taught it for the first time in the fall. And it is such a good class.
It's good.
It's a really good class because I pair the concepts with some readings that you don't have to read all at once. And then I give you some dialectical behavior DBT worksheets to be like, okay, how can I be more self-aware? Like, so each one I pair with something that you can actually be like, oh, maybe I should slow down, or all the things that we don't like. So keep an eye out for that.
Keep an eye out, guys. And I'll put all of that info in the description box or the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been such a good conversation. I feel like it's going to have to be a two-parter because we talked so much at the beginning. Like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, just, you know, ADHD and all of that. And we covered so much ground and more. So it's been a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
And yes, don't worry. You have plenty of time to learn more about your ADHD. And that's why I would say, like we said, no hate to coaches. Coaches are great. And they're an excellent tool. The only difference is I'm just there to give you the facts.
Yep.
You can do what you want with them.
Yes. You're imparting your wisdom. Yep.
Well, my reviews for my students, what they like is because I have two master's degrees and because I care a lot about education and I check my sources and I check my facts, that when you come to my class, you don't need to worry that much about where my sources are coming from because I'm very going to be science-based. I'm just going to give you the facts.
The facts,
So the facts, like we talked about medicine, it's just these are the facts. Like, it doesn't mean anything more.
No, I'm just telling you how it is.
Pro medicine or anti-medicine, but it's like, these are the facts.
And you do what you want with the facts.
And
as
so
you take them as you want. Yep.
But they do appreciate that they know my sources are going to be good and that they're going to be there when they need them. Because people think they have to do the work. I'm like, no, you don't have to read them. It's just like when you want, you have this resource.
It's there.
And I feel that safety net for ADHDers provides them so much comfort when they need the science.
Absolutely.
Like, science.
It's comforting. No, science is comforting, especially if you don't reject it and you're not, you know,
I give the reading for all of it, so it's like you don't need to read it, but when you need it or you need prove something, I give you all of these resources.
Guys, you heard it here first. Science. and so much more. Well, thank you so much again, and see you guys in the next episode. All right.